Okay, Genesis 19 in your Bibles. How many of you guys know the city in the United States that's known as Sin City? Does anybody know? Yeah.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Las Vegas, Nevada. That's the one. I read a little bit about it. Found out that over 38.5 million visitors go there each year. And last year, they did a spending... I guess they researched the spending. They found out the visitors last year spent over $36 billion in Las Vegas on just miscellaneous stuff. But you guys know Las Vegas, since it's known as being Sin City, it's obviously known for illegal activities, for gambling, for immorality, just bad stuff. And so as I was looking into Las Vegas, and you can go to websites and plan out your trip and all this stuff. But the unfortunate thing about Las Vegas is that a lot of people get this idea in their minds that they're going to go there and do something that nobody's ever going to find out about. In fact, I found a website that you can go to. You can type in a little bit about yourself, and it will give you a whole new profile. It will tell you. Give you a brand new name. It will tell you ideas to tell people what you did while you were in Vegas so you can cover up what you really did, okay? Let me give you a couple examples. You can click on the Be Anyone link on this website, and it says this: we'll give you a profession and everything you need to back up your story, including a brief history, printable business card, pre-recorded 1-800 number, and a website. Can you believe that? So basically, you go to this website, you give them an idea of who you are, and it makes up a new person that when you go to Las Vegas, you're supposed to tell people that you're this person. So nobody really knows who you are. You can do whatever you want. So I thought, well, I'll make up my own profile, see what they come up with. The profile they gave me was Double Agent Angus from Fiji, all right? So my name is Angus, I'm a double agent, and I live in Fiji. So next time I'm in Las Vegas, I guess I'm supposed to tell people that. But if you guys want to start calling me Angus, I think I'd be okay with that, all right? So if you'd like to do that, that's okay. On this website, they also have what they call an alibi generator. Do you guys know what an alibi is? Basically, an alibi is a story of what you've done or where you've been or something like that. So the idea behind this is if you go to Las Vegas, you do things that you don't want other people back home knowing about, then you go to the alibi generator and they make up a story that you can tell to people when you get back home. Isn't that terrible? They make up this story so that you can cover up your actions in Vegas. They also, on this website, have what they call the photo faker. And they have different scenes of pictures in Las Vegas that you can upload your picture and move your face around and basically put your face on the body of somebody else doing something in Las Vegas so that when somebody says, well, what were you really doing in Las Vegas? You're like, oh, well, here's a picture of what I was doing. And so you email them this picture. So as you can tell, I went golfing this last weekend in Vegas. Isn't that nice? Yeah, you laugh, and actually last night I showed that picture, and they said that I looked like a hippie, I had big ears, and I was deformed. And I was like, wow, Merry Christmas to you guys too, you're so nice. But you guys know Vegas' slogan, right? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And I would think that if Sodom and Gomorrah, the cities that we learn about today, specifically Sodom, if they had a slogan, I think it would be very similar. What happens in Sodom stays in Sodom, I think would be exactly what they would say. Because the thing with these people is that they think they are getting away with their sin. They think that what they're doing is okay and nobody is ever going to find out. And it's totally okay. Because Sodom was actually a lot like, I would say it's like our modern day Las Vegas. In fact, I even read an online magazine. This was from a source that's They're not Christians when they write this, but this is what they say. They say Las Vegas has finally abandoned the idea that it is a family destination and wholly embraced its hard-earned reputation as the modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah. So people in the world even know that Sodom and Gomorrah were evil cities, and they often link Las Vegas, Sin City, as the modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, you guys remember a couple things we learned about this city. It was the biggest, probably, of its time, city dwelling at this time. It was a center of commerce. It was a center of religion and the center of prosperity. In fact, when they excavated this city, all the cities dug up from the same time period, this city was six times larger than the biggest city that they dug up. The second biggest city was 25 acres. Sodom was 150 acres. So this city was huge. It was surrounded by a wall to kind of combat people coming into the city. This is a big place. And unfortunately, it was also a very sinful city. In fact, we read Genesis 18, verse 20. It says, "The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave." That's God talking. And when God says that there's a big problem, then there's a big problem. So what I hope you guys get today is that your sin will never escape God. It will never happen. You can do a lot of things that you may think nobody else knows about. In fact, you may be really good at covering up your tracks, erasing things, deleting things, figuring out how to lie to cover up different things. That, you know, that's your deal if that's what you want to do. But God knows. There's never been something hidden from Him. So let's start reading chapter 19 of Genesis, starting in verse 1. Now remember back in chapter 18 that the angels and this appearance of the Lord came to visit Abraham. Halfway through chapter 18, the two angels started walking away. And we meet up with them right here in chapter 19. Verse 1 says, "Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, 'Hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way.' And they said, 'No, but we will spend the night in the open square.' But he insisted strongly. So they turned into him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate." So first of all, number one, the righteous man in Sin City. The righteous man. We read later on in the Bible, towards the very end, 2 Peter chapter 2, we read about Lot. And it says in verse 8 that Lot was a righteous man who was distressed by the wickedness he saw and heard day after day. So the Bible tells us that Lot was a righteous man, but he was playing with unrighteousness. He was in a dangerous place. Remember with me real quick where Lot has come from, okay? Chapter 13 of Genesis. We read that Abraham and Lot had accumulated a lot of servants and animals, and they were fighting between each other, so it wasn't good. And so Abraham said, "You know what? We need to split up. So Lot, you choose where you want to go. I'll go the opposite way." And it says that Lot looked towards Sodom. Yeah, it was an evil city, but man, it looked so good. And it says in verse 12 of chapter 13 that Lot pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. He got really, really close to this evil city. Well, chapter 14 comes, and we find out in verse 12 of chapter 14 that now Lot is living inside of Sodom. So he's gone from getting real close to it to now he is right inside of it. And now, in chapter 19, we meet up with Lot. Verse 1 says that Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Sitting in the gate. This wasn't a place that just anybody sat. This was a place that the leaders, the head officials, the elders sat. This is where they held the town meetings, where justice was laid down, where the law was enforced, where punishment was enforced. So Lot has worked his way up through the hierarchy of this city to where now he is one of the leaders in this evil city. Interesting, this downward spiral that Lot has taken. And you know, although Lot is righteous, the sin of this city is about to take him down. It's about to consume him, overtake him. Look at verse 4. Now, before they lay down, speaking of the angels, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter around the house, surrounded the house, verse 5, and they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally." Okay, now, let me give you a literal interpretation from the New Living Translation. Verse 5 says literally, "Bring them out to us that we may have sex with them." All right? Now, remember, these are guys in the house, and these are guys surrounding the house. This is the first mention of homosexuality in the Bible. And this is happening in this evil city of Sodom with these guys who are trying to get with these other angels. They don't know that they're angels, but they really want to get with them. So they surround the house. Verse 6, so Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind him, and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please, let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof." This is a pretty gross story, you know, if we think about it. You guys are like, I see some of your faces like, I'm kind of getting sick to my stomach. That's okay. So these angels show up. They say, "Hey, Lot, how's it going?" Lot says, "Great. Hey, come over to my house. We'll cook a meal. It'll be great. Everything's good." And so he says, no. The angels say, "No, you know what? Actually, we're going to sleep outside in the city square." And Lot's like, "Guys, seriously, you don't want to do that." Lot knows the evil men in the city. And so they finally, it says he insists. And so finally they come over, they get to the house. And now all of a sudden, there's a mob of angry men outside. They're like, "Lot, bring out the good looking guys inside." All right. And Lot's like, it says Lot walks outside and says, "Brethren, do not do so wickedly." And then he does something crazy. I don't know why he does this, but he offers to give them his daughters instead of these men. I don't know how that is a loving father, but that's what he offers, okay? And they refuse. That's how evil these guys are. So then it happens that they're coming up against Lot. They're so angry that they can't get to these guys that it says they're about to break down the door. They're so angry. So then it says that the angels from inside the house grab Lot, pull him in, shut the door, and make all these guys around the house blind. They blind them, okay? So just picture the scene here. Hundreds of mad, blind, angry, gay guys. Where are those guys? And I saw them earlier, you know. Crazy, right? They're mad, they're angry, and they really want to get to these guys, and the angels won't let them. So this is a pretty evil place, would you agree? Like, oh man, this is disgusting. Well, it's interesting to me, too, where Lot is in the middle of all this, because he's not just a leader. You realize that in verse 7, he calls these guys his brethren. Look at verse 7. It says, and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly." Did you catch that? He calls them his brethren. That's like for us saying, "Hey, dudes. Hey, bro." He's calling them friends. He has become so involved in this city that he is right there with those guys. Sin City is a dangerous place for a righteous man to be. So, soon comes, number 2, the rapid escape from Sin City. Look at verse 12. Then the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here?" And this is the angel speaking. "Have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place, for we will destroy this city, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." Have you guys ever had to escape from somewhere real quickly? Anybody? Maybe you did something, you're running away because you're scared, something like that. I read a news story about a squirrel who had to make a rapid escape. This happened in Wisconsin. I don't know what this squirrel was doing, but he got on top of a roof of a house. And I guess because it's Christmas time, he thought it would be fun to imitate Santa. I don't know. But he went down the chimney of the house, okay? Now, obviously, the squirrel wasn't too smart because there was a fire going in the fireplace. So he climbs up on the roof and he's like, "Oh, a chimney. Ho, ho, ho," you know, in a little squirrel voice or something. And he just jumps down in there and he falls into the fire. So this little squirrel, yeah, some of you girls are all, "Oh," and all the guys are all, "Yeah, that's awesome," you know. And so this squirrel panics and just jumps out of the fireplace and just starts running around the house like a crazy burning squirrel, okay? Can you imagine the chaos? That's crazy. This squirrel was obviously a little scared of the fire. Thankfully, they finally caught him. His paws were a little bloody, but he made it out okay. So he didn't die or anything like that. He was a little scared of the fire, and he had to make a rapid escape. And that's exactly where Lot finds himself, because Sodom is in danger of fire. They don't know how bad it's going to be, but they're definitely in danger. Look at verse 14. "So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, 'Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city.' But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, 'Arise, take your wife and your daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city.' While he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So it came to pass when they had brought him outside that he said, 'Escape for your life. Do not look behind you nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed.'" So Lot goes and tells his sons-in-law, "Hey guys, get out of here. God's going to destroy this place." And they're like, "Dude, that's funny. Man, that's really, you're crazy. What are you talking about? Dude, come have a drink." You know, they're probably like, "Dude, calm down. It's going to be fine. You're way too worked up about this." They wouldn't listen. But I don't think Lot fully understood either. It says in verse 16 that Lot lingered. That means he hung around for a little while. He runs out to his sons-in-law. "Hey, guys, get out of here. God's going to destroy the city." "Oh, I think I'm going to head to bed." What? God, you just said God's going to destroy the city. You're going to bed? The next verse says that the morning dawned. He stayed the night in this city that was in danger of fire. And then verse 16 says that he lingered. Finally, verse 16 tells us that the angels had to take him by the hand, his wife and his two daughters, and literally drag them out of the city to get them to go. What? Lot, pay attention here. But Lot continues to doubt. Look at verse 19. This is Lot speaking. "Indeed, now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. See now, this city is near enough to flee, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live." Skip down to verse 22. "Hurry," the angels say, "escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." So verse 19, he says, the angels say, "Get out of there." And Lot says, "Well, I can't escape to the mountains because something might happen to me." And he gets so scared. And he cries to this angel like, "Well, what if a mountain lion, you know?" All these things are running through his head as if God couldn't save him. As if God wasn't saving him already. Do you remember what the angels did? They grabbed him by the hand and walked him out of the city. God is very clearly saving him, but he's still doubting. But this rapid escape came right in time, because number three is the righteous judgment of Sin City. Now, let's take a journey, all right? I figure since Lot is taking a journey, let's take a journey here real quick in our minds. We're going to take a journey to the land of imperfection, all right? Now, here's the thing about the land of imperfection. It's going to be really hard for you guys to get a picture of this in your mind, because you guys are all perfect, all right? And you guys never deserve punishment. You've never gotten spanked or grounded. In fact, you probably don't even know what I'm meaning when I say that. So this is going to be a little hard, okay? But let me tell you a little bit about this land of imperfection. Believe it or not, in this land, and this is going to shock you, shocked me. Did you know that in this land of imperfection, sometimes there are boys and girls, this blows me away, sometimes they call their brothers or sisters bad names. Can you believe that? This is the land of imperfection. Could you believe that? I can't believe that. I also heard that in this land that sometimes, and this is also just going to shock you, but sometimes the kids don't do their chores when their parents ask them to. Can you believe, what? I know, I knew you guys were going to be shocked by this. And then I also read this, and this one just blew me away the most, all right? Sometimes they cuss. Sometimes they cheat on tests. And guess what? Sometimes they get in fights. What? Those people deserve judgment, don't you think? Man. Now, none of you responded. Why is that? I think they deserve judgment in the land of imperfection. That's terrible. Man, those horrible people that sin so much. Man, I read about some prisoners who got some interesting judgment or punishment. They tried to burn their jail down, and it didn't work. And so they sent all the prisoners to a different jail while they were rebuilding the prison. And while they were rebuilding it, they decided to do something a little different. They said, you know what? If they're going to act like little kids, then we're going to treat them like little kids. So all of the walls in the prison were painted pink, flamingo pink, and then they stenciled little blue teddy bears all over the wall. Can you believe that? So the prisoners get back and they're all, dang it, I like my other prison better, you know? I also read about prisoners in Phoenix, Arizona, who, same kind of thing. They wanted to calm them down a little bit. So they took away all their normal issued clothes that they got, and they reissued everything in pink. Everything in pink, all right? Shirts in pink, boxers in pink, socks in pink. They have pink sheets, pink towels, pink washcloths. Everything's pink. Can you imagine hardened criminals wearing like all pink? That's a little crazy, right? Well, I'd say they definitely deserve that judgment. Well, the righteous judgment on Sin City is much, much worse. Verse 24 tells us what happened. Then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. That word brimstone is found 14 times in the Bible. And every single time it refers to judgment and devastation because of sin. You can find it in Revelation, where the beast, the followers of the beast, Satan, every list of evil persons in Revelation is destroyed with fire and brimstone. These people received almost like an early glimpse of hell because of their sin. A couple weeks ago, we had, maybe some of you guys were here on the Saturday night when our guest came and talked about Sodom and Gomorrah. He brought some artifacts, but some interesting things that he brought were some little pieces of pottery that they had found in this new excavation of Sodom that had been heated up so quickly and at such high temperatures that you can see the outside of them boiled to glass. That's how hot and intense this heat got so quickly. But the amazing thing is that back when Sodom was around, they did not have technology that could have heated anything that hot. They probably could have gotten it a couple hundred degrees. But for it to look like that, scientists estimate today that the heat would have had to be at a minimum 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. That quick. And the amazing thing is that they found pots that were still sitting upright, that the outside was boiled to glass and the bottom was still pottery, still clay, because it hit so quickly and so powerfully that it boiled it, it destroyed it, and then it was gone. It was smoking after that. Can you imagine that? 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. You know how hot that is? That's 23% of the heat of the surface of the sun. They said that is the minimum amount of temperature to make something look like this. God sent some pretty intense destruction. Can you tell that God doesn't tolerate sin? He doesn't like it. He hates it. He judges it. Verse 17, the angels say, escape for your life. And here's the key words, do not look behind you. Verse 26, but his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. All of a sudden, she's running, she looks back, and she's like, frozen, pillar of salt. I don't know why salt. I think it would have been cool, like a pillar of Krispy Kremes or, you know, something like that, that at least would have been useful. But a pillar of salt, she became a monument of disobedience. Paused right there, her life was taken because she disobeyed. Verse 27, and Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. Then he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land which went up like the smoke of a furnace. Abraham, it says that he's probably still by his tent where he had been with the Lord. And it says that morning he gets up, he looks down toward Sodom and Gomorrah where it used to be. And all it is a big plume of smoke. Probably in our minds looks like a big mushroom cloud. I wonder if it looked like to him. But you know what's interesting? He wasn't just down the street from Sodom and Gomorrah. He was about 45 to 50 miles away. You know how far that is? That's about Albuquerque to Santa Fe. And he could see the smoke rising from the city. This was a huge disaster. And you know what? A lot of us haven't seen a big explosion, but we've seen pictures of it. We've seen them on TV, a big mushroom cloud, something exploding. We've seen that kind of thing. But in these days, that had probably never been seen. So I wonder what a shock this was to Abraham. I'm sure he was so heartbroken. But look at verse 29. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. So remember, Abraham had prayed for the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. God remembered his prayer, although he destroyed the cities. He remembered his prayer and he saved Lot. God answers prayer. And this is evidence of it. So even after, remember back to the flood, God's righteous judgment then, sin still existed. Same here, after this righteous judgment, number four is the remaining citizens of Sin City. You remember probably after the flood happened, the first major sin that took place happened because somebody got drunk. Noah got drunk. And it happens, unfortunately, similarly here. Verse 30. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Skip down to verse 36. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn, yeah, I know it's okay to get grossed out by that. the firstborn, bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. So Lot and his daughters fall into this disgusting sin. Even after God's judgment, sin was still present. And because of this sin, it caused hundreds of years of problems for Israel. Later on down the road, verse 38 says that the Moabites and the Ammonites were born that day from Lot's daughters. And we read about the Moabites later on. They were proud, arrogant, idolatrous. Israel was told not to befriend them. The Ammonites were constant enemies of the Israelites throughout the Old Testament. Do you see how this sin affected God's people for hundreds of years later? Your sin does not only affect you. So this slogan, what happens in Sodom stays in Sodom, failed on quite a few different levels. First of all, the people of Sodom, they knew that their lives were wrong, but they were okay with it. And they thought they were getting away with it. But they were destroyed. God did. God knew. God knew what was going on. Lot, it failed for him too, because he should have set a better example for his family. Instead, because he got so caught up in the worldly aspects of Sodom, eventually, his wife did, his daughters did, and it cost his wife her life. And then, of course, because of Lot's drunkenness, his daughter's sins, it caused Israel hundreds of years of problems as well. So I would say this is a pretty devastating account of God's judgment, of judgment and devastation because of sin. So maybe you're asking yourself, what in the world can I learn from any of this? In fact, honestly, I'm a little grossed out by chapter 19. That's okay, because there's a lot of crazy stuff that goes on. Well, let me tell you a little bit what you can learn. A couple weeks ago, I was at Target shopping for baby stuff. And we were there and walking up and down the aisles, and a product caught my eye. Okay, now they have all of these different things that you can buy for babies. You know, they have like the diaper rash cream and they have different stuff like that, right? Well, one of these products really caught my eye because they were not scared to hide the identity of the product. Check out the name of the product. Butt paste. All right? That's what they called it. Very clearly, that is butt paste. A tube O butt paste. All right? So I would say that this company likes to be pretty honest, right? You know, they're not trying to hide what it is. They're not like, oh, well, this is a nice, mild diaper rash cream. No, it's butt paste. That's what it is, you know? That's what they call it. I thought that was so funny. I was like, man, I have to have a picture of that. Now, this is going to sound funny, but we can learn a lot from butt cream, okay? Butt paste. Let me tell you why. Because this company is not scared to call it what it is. And you know what? In our own lives, we should not be scared to call the sin in our lives exactly what it is. We should be honest with ourselves and with God. We read a lot about some evil stuff that happened in these chapters. We read about these evil men in Sodom who tried to have sex with these guys that were staying in Lot's house. Terrible, disgusting story. And we read about it. We read about Lot and his daughters. And I saw your faces. I heard your responses. Ugh. You know, you kind of get the shivers through your whole body. Like, oh, I kind of need to go throw up now, you know. Well, Romans chapter 1, I want you to write that down and read it when you get home today. Romans chapter 1 talks about homosexuality, talks about how God gave people up to their own desires to do what they wanted to do. And he lists a bunch of sins. And you know what I find interesting in this list of sins is that hatred, envy, gossip, disobeying your parents are all listed in the same list as murder and homosexuality. Obeying your parents is in God's eyes on the same level as murder and homosexuality. Disobedience, disrespect, hatred, envy. God hates sin, and it is time that we call sin what it is in our own lives. Let me give you a couple ideas of how to do that. Disobeying your parents is sin, and it separates you from God. That's what the Bible tells us. Disobeying your parents. Cheating on a test is sin. It separates you from God. That's hard to hear, isn't it? Talking behind someone else's back is sin. It makes God sick. He's tired of it. This week has been a challenge for me because I'm so distracted, because I know at any time Jen could go into labor and we could have a baby. And I'm excited about it, but I don't know when it's going to happen. But I've noticed that I've done a couple things to prepare. We have our bags packed and they're sitting by the door ready to throw it on my shoulder and run out the door to the hospital. We have the car seat sitting right there so that we can take the baby home when we come home. We have the room all set up. The baby room's all decorated and stuff. I have the phone number to Loveless programmed in my phone so that I can call them while we're driving. I'm ready, but still I don't know when it's going to happen. And the thing with this story today is that life was about to change for these people, but they weren't ready. They weren't prepared. I still don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but I'm ready whenever it does. Are you ready for judgment when it comes? Are you ready for Jesus to come back? If he came today, would he be happy with the way that you're living your life? Because I think that a lot of you, all of us, fit into, I would say, probably one of three categories in this story, in this account. First of all, maybe you are, and I hope none of you are, but maybe you are Lot, like Lot's sons-in-law. They were warned of judgment and they laughed. They didn't care. They just kept on living how they were living because that was fun. Or maybe you're like Lot. You're a righteous person. You've made a decision to follow Christ, but you're caught up in the middle of sin and evil. Or maybe you're like Abraham. You're praying for those people. You're doing your best. But sometimes it seems like God doesn't answer your prayer. Sometimes he does, but it seems in little ways. Don't give up. If you're like his sons-in-law, get out before destruction comes. If you're like Lot, back away. Run away from the evil that you've entangled yourself in. And if you're like Abraham, keep praying. Trust in the Lord. And this morning, I want to give you an opportunity, after we close this service, to come and talk to a leader. Because I think if we're all honest in this room this morning, we would say that there is something in our life that we have been okay with that should disgust us. We read this list in Romans chapter 1 of sins that disgust the Lord. And we read in Genesis 19 and we're like, oh, that's terrible that those guys would do that. But look at your own life. Are you disgusted with the sin that you are allowing in your own life? It's time to get right this morning. And we're going to have, at the end of this service, I'm going to ask the leaders to come up here. And they'll be standing up here ready to pray with you, ready to counsel you, point you in the right direction, and give you an opportunity to confess your sin to somebody. We're not going to go tell everybody. We just want to give you an opportunity to talk to somebody about what's going on in your life. Now is the time this morning to get right with the Lord. But if I could leave you with one thing. We've talked about some hard stuff here this morning. And the last thing I want you to do is go home hanging your head, because sin is such a problem, because hell is reality and we deserve it because of our sin. We don't need to hang our head because of that. If you could take away one thing today, I hope that you will walk away knowing that as much as hell, as much as sin is reality, God's love is also reality. And he loves you and he has a purpose for your life. And if you don't realize that, or if you need to get your life right with the Lord this morning, now's your chance to do that. Let's pray, and then you can come up for prayer. God, we just look to you. We thank you that you have sacrificed for us. Lord, that you have given 100% for us, and I pray that you would put it in our hearts to give 100% back to you. Lord, we just thank you so much for your faithfulness, your love. God, I pray that you would convict of sin that shouldn't be in our lives that we have allowed to be there, and help us to live for you. In your name we pray. Amen. Leaders are up here to pray with you. Otherwise, you guys are dismissed. Have an awesome, awesome Sunday.